Hi, I'm Sue Diamond, and I'm the founder and director of the Good Life Therapy Center, located here in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We help couples and individuals heal from addiction and early trauma, with a special focus on how developmental setbacks and deficits lead to relationship problems. I'd like to share with you here our approach to working with couples. And this is my article, Developmental Couples Therapy, How to Help Distressed and Disengaged Couples Be More Grown Up as Partners. I love doing couples therapy. It is exciting, it's unpredictable, and it challenges me as a therapist to be the best I can be. This wasn't always the case, believe me. Before I trained in the Bader-Pearson developmental model of couples therapy, I dreaded most couples sessions. I did not have a roadmap for understanding where couples were getting stuck and, more importantly, what interventions would be the most incisive at moving them forward. I had no idea how to be a leader in the room and often felt confused, ineffective, or worse, out of control. Many couples come to therapy hoping we can fix the problem. I let them know early on that I learned it is much more effective to focus on helping them identify and create the type of relationship they long for. I want to push their capacity to both envision their goals and then align their behavior in such a way that it becomes their reality. Most couples want a loving, caring, supportive partnership, but the reality of how they treat each other flies in the face of their desire. Most couples are both intrigued and relieved to discover that by taking personal responsibility and giving it a really honest effort, they can break long-standing, painful patterns with one another. These long-entrenched patterns are based in disappointment, hurt, and fear, which is unconsciously driving the dynamic between them. This is what makes couples therapy both stimulating and potentially overwhelming for therapists. Developmental stages. Couples relationships go through developmental stages that mirror Margaret Mahler's stages of child development. Mahler's stages include autistic stage from birth to 2 months, symbiotic stage 2 to 6 months, separation individuation stage, the first being differentiation from 6 to 9 months, then comes practicing from 10 to 16 months, then rapprochement from 17 to 24 months, and finally, object constancy, consolidation of individuality and development from 24 to 36 months. In the developmental approach, couples go through similar stages, and within each stage, there is a developmental task. The couple's stages and their developmental tasks are as follows. The first stage is symbiosis, and the task is exclusive bonding. The second stage is differentiation, and the task is defining themselves, understanding their partner, and managing differences. The third stage is practicing, and the developmental task is individuation. The fourth stage is rapprochement, and the developmental task is reconnecting. And finally, the last stage is mutual interdependence, with the developmental task being synergy. When couples meet and fall in love, they enter the symbiotic phase of their relationship. This can sometimes seem more like a temporary psychosis as they begin to merge their two individual selves into one undifferentiated we. Lots of time is spent together emphasizing their similarities and what they love about what the other says and does. Differences and disappointments are not noticed so much. These bonding behaviors are assisted by the hormones that are released at this stage. This is an important part of the relationship because it builds a strong foundation and helps each partner to feel more connected and secure. However, just as the infant recognizes that she has a body separate from her mother and can begin to move out on her own, so each partner begins to feel that the exclusive focus on sameness limits each other. However, just as the infant recognizes that she has a body separate from her mother and can begin to move out on her own, so each partner begins to feel that the exclusive focus on sameness limits each one's ability to be their own autonomous self. This launches them into the next stage of their relationship, differentiation. Now they don't necessarily want to spend all their time together and are more aware of the irritants and disillusionments with their partner. Their different interests, different views, and different priorities come into focus, and they learn to manage the anxiety that arises in the face of these differences. They begin to express and ask for what they want and let their partner see more parts of themselves than just being agreeable. They see their partner as a separate being and develop empathy for their partner's experiences. A healthy adjustment through this stage would allow each partner to move through the next three stages and on to a deepening intimacy. These are not usually the couples who come to us for help. Instead, we counselors see the couples who don't make it through the first or second stage. Thwarted development. When a seed is planted, growth happens naturally and occurs in sequence. When couples get stuck in early development, it thwarts their ability to make their natural way to psychological wellness and maturity. They can't grow up. I want to focus here on the two ways that most couples get stuck in the symbiotic phase. In the book Tell Me No Lies by Dr. Ellen Bader and Dr. Peter Pearson, written in 2000, this is referred to as, quote, the dark side of the honeymoon, unquote. And in another book called Intimacy After Infidelity, it's referred to as soured symbiosis. In the book Tell Me No Lies by Dr. Ellen Bader and Dr. Peter Pearson, this is referred to as, quote, the dark side of the honeymoon, unquote. And in the book called Intimacy After Infidelity by Stephen Solomon and Lori Tiagno, it's called soured symbiosis. When the sweetness of two equals one wears thin and the ability to help each other grow and blossom is not possible, the relationship is stuck. The relationship then takes one of two common tangents. In the Bader-Pearson model, the first type of couple is called hostile dependent. They will fight over the smallest events and constantly are blaming each other and are very easily triggered by their partner's nonverbal gestures, including tone of voice. This couple may have had little or no sweetness in the early stage of their relationship. This is due to their high reactivity to one another. Neither can stay calm enough for long enough to work through any important issues that cause tension between them. Instead of differentiating, they do a lot of mind reading and will often feel offended when you suggest that they may indeed not be that good at it. These couples can challenge even the most seasoned therapist, especially when they turn on you as a way to find closeness with each other. The ability to provide structure, be able to circumscribe what you see happening, and to take an extremely active role in the sessions are all essential skills when working with a couple like this. Here's how a typical session with a hostile dependent couple may start. Sandra and Mike came to counseling to discuss their disagreement about having children. They've been together for 6 years and married for four. They had a rocky start to their relationship and still report that it's difficult to get along. Sandra will say, "I thought Mike was the kind of guy who wanted to have lots of kids. That's really important to me, and I can't believe he's now saying he's not sure he's ready." "Really? I mean, what in the world would a person have to do to get ready? We've known each other long enough. I don't get it. What's his problem?" And Mike says, "You are so selfish. All you ever do is put me down in front of other people and make me sound like an idiot. I'm sick and tired of you treating me like I'm your misbehaving child. You're not perfect either. One day you say you want kids, the next day you say you want out of the relationship. What the hell am I supposed to believe? Do you or don't you? I want to know right now, are we in or are we out? Being able to stay cool and intervene quickly to stop the name-calling, verbal attacks, and reenactment of trauma bonding is a crucial first step. Knowing how to help them become, as Ellen Bader says, curious rather than furious, is a developmental intervention that will promote growth. The second type of couple stuck in symbiosis is called the conflict-avoidant couple. This couple cannot tolerate the tension of differences and the strife that will naturally occur in the course of a long-term relationship. So they implicitly agree to avoid, ignore, and/or sweep under the carpet all difficulties and/or differences. This type of couple eventually begins to feel dead, and it is not uncommon for one or both of them to be having an affair. This couple can present as very nice, with the anger buried or split off, or very tense, where the anger is just below the surface and palpable. These are challenging couples to work with, and one of the common mistakes we make as therapists is to work harder than they do. Here's an example of a conflict-avoidant couple. She says, "I'm not sure what to do. It sounds like she wants us to speak about what's important to us. Do you want to start?" And he says, "No, you go first. Your priorities are more important than mine. I'll wait." "But I don't want you to wait. I want you to go first." "No, you go first. You always have the better ideas anyway." "Okay, then, I'll go first." This is a couple who is determined to go along to get along so as to avoid any conflict. They seem nice enough to each other, but both are incredibly unhappy and there is no passion between them. Helping them build the emotional muscle necessary to tolerate the risk of being seen for who they are, separate from their partner, can at times feel tantamount to moving a small mountain. Nonetheless, intervening developmentally and supporting them to harness the tension they feel while expressing disappointment, disagreement, hopes, and fears will promote their growth as individuals and as a couple. What is differentiation? Differentiation is defined as the active, ongoing process of defining oneself and activating oneself in the context of a close interpersonal relationship and risking separation, by Ellen Bader and Peter Pearson. In other words, you must do the hard work of differentiation in the relationship rather than on your own. This is why I've come to believe that solid couples therapy can help create change in a way that individual therapy cannot do. Helping clients learn how to take emotional risks with their partner in the room pushes their development in a way that translates to more grown-up interactions at home. Promoting differentiation with your couples. When couples are stuck in symbiosis, it's because they refuse to give up the childhood fantasy of unconditional love. So much pain is reenacted between well-meaning individuals whose unconscious, projected wish is impossible for their partner to fulfill. One of the primary tools used in the Bader-Pearson model is the initiator-inquirer. While it appears on the surface to be a communication exercise, it is much more than that. It's a way to promote development by changing the internal structure of each partner. Each one learns to manage their reactivity, to increase their tolerance for anxiety, to delay gratification, and emotionally give to one another. Most importantly, it also helps get you, the therapist, out of the middle. When working with the hostile-dependent couple, you must take a strong leadership role and both support and calm down the hyper-reactive state of each partner throughout the session. You must be actively intervening to slow down the escalations, to educate them, and most importantly, to provide a quiet and calm reassurance that you are in control and can help them out of their pain. By creating a sense of safety in your office, they can begin to relax and allow their fears and hurts to surface in non-defensive ways. For example, here is how I approached my intervention with Sandra and Mike. I said, "It's easy to see where the two of you get stuck. It seems that when each of you desires something important or is hurt by the other, you each go on the attack." And when I say that to them, I'm circumscribing their developmental arrest. Then I went on to say, what's harder to do is for each of you to take the risk of showing who you really are and what you are feeling in a more vulnerable way. This is crucial for creating the safety necessary for true intimacy. Sandra, if you're willing, I'd like you to initiate a discussion with Mike about what having children means to you. And Mike, I'd like you to just listen and track what Sandra is saying, and I'll coach you to ask questions, to be a good inquirer in a way that will deepen the understanding for both of you on this issue. I will coach each of you actively to help you learn your roles as initiator and inquirer. Sandra, I'd like you to take a deep breath, close your eyes if it helps, and just take a moment to connect with yourself and what is most important to you about having children. Mike, can you also take a deep breath and tell yourself that you are not trying to solve a problem right now? You don't even have to agree with what Sandra's going to tell you, but that you can listen to her and try to understand her better? Remind yourself that this is not about you, even if your name is mentioned. Mike says, wait a minute, what about my position on this issue? And I tell him, there will be a time for you to tell your side too, and I will be asking Sandra to listen in the same way. I am going to slow you both down so you can take turns revealing more of yourselves to each other. I want you to understand that if you can change how you are together, especially on important topics like this, solutions will arise on their own. Mike says, okay, but if she starts blaming me, I'm not going to just sit here and take it. And I reassure him, yes, none of us likes to be blamed. It makes us defensive and it damages our feelings of safety. So if Sandra blames you, I will coach her so she can learn to express herself in non-blaming ways. Sandra, if you are ready, tell Mike something that will help him understand what is fueling your passion on this issue. And so I start to ask her to self-define in her relationship. Now, in the example of the conflict-avoidant couple, like Sarah and Ben, you have to be just as active, but in the opposite way. Rather than trying to calm down their reactivity, you attempt to light a fire under each of them. You want to push them forward while at the same time supporting them to get past the tremendous fear and anxiety that prevents them from expressing their differences. So I said, Sarah, have you ever held on to your desire to have Ben take the lead, even when he's uncomfortable doing it? Sarah says, sometimes I insist he do things, but mostly no. I guess it would feel mean to me. And I said, Ben, have there been times when going first has felt like too big a risk for you? And he said, I want Sarah to be happy anything. I generally wait for her to decide and then I go along. It's just easier that way. And then I said, well, it certainly avoids any potential disagreements or conflict of any sort. However, if the two of you continue to tiptoe around each other as though you were fragile china dolls ready to break at the slightest pressure, it'll keep you from knowing each other and it will kill any passion in your relationship. What you are doing keeps you both in hiding, which is safer to each of you, but eventually you'll get bored and slowly drift apart. Ben, are you willing to take a risk here and tell Sarah something that is a priority to you, to be an initiator that you would like to focus on in here? So by doing this, I am both pushing their level of developmental tension and encouraging them to harness it for growth rather than run from it. Creating the opportunity for them to tolerate tension more allows for the truth about what is not working to be revealed. With this type of couple, it is often slow and laborious work, with couples wondering, why is this taking so long? The truth is, the therapy cannot go any faster than they can both developmentally endure. As the therapist, your understanding of this, along with your patients, will create the success the couple is hoping for. Over the past years, I have used this model, and I have had great joy in witnessing tremendous growth in the couples I work with. I am so passionate about this work that I now train and supervise other therapists with the goal of creating a community of developmental couples therapists who can support one another while creating real and positive change in their couple's clients. As the therapist, your understanding of this, along with your patients, will create the success the couple is hoping for. Over the past years, I have used this model, and I have had the great joy of witnessing tremendous growth in the couples I work with. I'm so passionate about this work that I now train and supervise other therapists with the goal of creating a community of developmental couples therapists who can support one another while creating real and positive change with their couples. Thank you for listening. It's been my pleasure to share my thoughts and experiences with you. I hope that you've heard some things that resonate with your own experiences working with couples, and that it validates how challenging this work can be, especially with couples who are stuck in symbiosis. If you have questions, or you're interested in further training in this model, or you know couples who may benefit, please get in touch. You can reach us at admin@goodlifetherapy.ca, or call us at 1-604-682-1484.